Welcome to the Comics Podcast Crossover. I'm your host for this episode, which I am James Harris, also known as the Comic Book Savant. This episode, we decided to focus on our favorite villains. You'll hear from about six different podcasts on doing short segments on their favorite villains in general, in comics or literary works, our favorite villains. I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with my podcast, which is the Comic Book Savant, or some of the other podcasts. This is something we used to do where all the different podcasts, comic book podcasts out there, contribute to a basically an anthology type podcast. We all get together on a particular topic, record our segments, stream it all together, and put it out there for the general public to give you kind of little snippets of what our show is about, and kind of it's like a community thing that we all put into. So I hope you guys enjoy. Again, we have six podcasts with segments coming up for your enjoyment about our favorite villains. So here comes the first podcast right now.
Hello, this is Rick Croxton from the Book Cave, Rick's Comics, and Future Four Color podcast. And to tell you who my favorite villain is, well, we'd have to go way back to the early 20th century to the character of Fu Manchu. If you wonder why, it's because Fu Manchu is one of the more intellectual villains that, unlike some of the other villains who was pretty much defeated on a daily basis and thrown in jail and escaped, it's almost like a revolving door for them. Fu Manchu, even though he doesn't always succeed, he's not captured. And, you know, at times you might think he's dead, but he does come back with a, you know, explanation. And he's one of these characters, you know, he thinks his thing through. He's been going on for quite a while. And he's been a villain longer than the heroes he goes against have been alive. And there's other villains who have been based upon him, similar, you know, in the comics. You have Ra's al Ghul, who would be his closest, character adaption of what Fu Manchu is. He's, like I said, Fu Manchu, even though he is a villain, you know, in the way he acts and everything, he doesn't really start off as one. Basically, all he wanted to do is get the British out of his country. And he's, you know, he would have conceived, any other time, he would have been considered a hero. But his actions over the years become more villainous. And it's a series of books. You know, even though a lot of people know I'm a huge pulp fan, it could easily be considered a pulp character, even though he never was in the pulps. And just check them out. You know, there are several novels. There are 14 novels by Sax Rohmer, and we've seen a cut by three others that came out since his death, and more coming soon. So, I mean, he's a character that should be easily checked into and enjoyed for who he is. Check out the Sax Rohmer books. Check out the newer ones that which come out in the last 20 years. And I think you enjoy it. And see how many people that you can see that's come from who Fu Manchu who are based upon Fu Manchu. I think you can name quite a few that are still popular today. Thanks, and we'll see you in the podcast. Bye.
This is a good example of why I love doing the comics podcast crossover. It gives you different points of view, and something as simple, or you would think as simple, as a topic of villains, how varied a response you can get. I would have never thought of Fu Manchu, and I love the references that were made to seeing like the archetype of a Fu Manchu type character be used in something in related to comics when he made the whole comparison to Ra al Ghul. You know, just something that I didn't even, you know, look at in taking over, taking on this topic and trying to come up with what I was going to do my segment on, which you'll see a little bit further in a podcast. But again, you get a lot of different comic podcasters, you know, on one topic, giving you just varied views and can open up your eyes to something that maybe not have been brought to your attention before. It might lead you down the road to something new to read or new to try out, that expand your, you know, your reader scope. You know, I know it's me as a comic podcaster over the years, because of listeners and because of things of this and listening to other podcasts, just because I do a podcast doesn't mean I'm not a fan or I'm not a listener of some of the same people that are doing segments on this podcast, and how, from when I started to now, how the things that I read are vastly different from things that I read 5 or 6 years ago before I ever started doing a podcast. So, I really appreciate that segment. We're going to get the next segment, which is from the guys over at the Donuts and Top Cow podcast. So here they come next.
Hey, this is John Grigas with the Donuts and Top Cow podcast.
And this is Josh Crawley, also of the Donuts and Top Cow podcast.
Yeah, each week Josh and I sit and we eat donuts and we talk about those, but mostly we read Top Cow books and we talk about the very rich Top Cow universe, as well as a lot of the other connected books that Top Cow puts out and some of the independent books like from Minotaur Press and some other lines that they have. We really believe Top Cow is putting out some really great stuff and it's worth checking them out. We're going to look at villains, and we kind of kicked around villains, and one of the more interesting, compelling villains in the Top Cow universe is Ian Nottingham.
Yes, a trained, is it the SES? Is that one of those British Special Forces acronyms? I can't keep them all straight.
Yeah, I'm not sure myself. I know Ian Nottingham first appeared, to my knowledge, in Witchblade 1. He was he was portrayed as a lackey to Kenneth Irons. And Kenneth Irons is another bad guy, but, you know, he's kind of like the obvious choice, who was in pursuit of control of the Witchblade, and he had Ian Nottingham as an enforcer for him.
Yeah. Ian's basically your tall, dark, brooding, wavy, long hair, even when there's no wind. So kind of a little counter to all the people that might like their TNA a little bit in Witchblade. So it's balance. A theme of Witchblade at times. And throughout the years, he's kind of tried to help Irons get the Witchblade. He himself has had a fragment of the Witchblade, known as Excalibur. And currently he is wielding the Bloodsword, one of the 13th artifacts.
He figures prominently into the artifact storyline, if anybody's following that Top Cow crossover. Basically, there are 13 artifacts in the Top Cow universe, and they include the Darkness and the Angelus and the Witchblade and a lot of those artifacts you might have heard of. There's 13 altogether, and the legend is if you put all 13 together in the same place, then the world as we know it will end. And there is an antagonist in artifacts that is fighting to get those 13 artifacts in one place so that he can bring about the end of this reality as we know it and start fresh with the new one. Ian is on the bad guy's side, I guess, by nature. But he's not always easy to peg because he's shown some glimpses of humanity throughout his history in Top Cow.
Yeah, him and Sarah Pizzini have off and on had a little thing at times when she's not busy, you know, sending him to prison in upstate New York or trying to get her child back.
Right.
So
he factors in. He's always a wild card when you see him paired up with people. He is kind of like he bites the hand that feeds him, I think. I know that, you know, Kenneth Irons has used him, but at one point in that first storyline with Witchblade, it turned out that Sarah was able to manipulate or actually influence, perhaps, Nottingham to show his true colors, which means that he's only out for himself. So if there's a better option, he's going to take it and jump sides.
It's been so long since I've read those. I probably should have double-checked, but I believe there might have been some mind control going on there. So he might have been busting out and fighting that, too.
I think
he was under deep cover at one point, too, with maybe the Italian mob. Yeah.
So he's a rich, interesting character, recurrent in the Witchblade, shows up in some of his own titles once in a while, and he's playing big in Artifacts, but we like him because he's complicated, he's got a good sense of humor, and he comes up with some pretty good lines.
He fights with a sword, and that's cool.
And he's a current wielder of the Blood Sword. The Blood Sword's kind of an interesting artifact because it's an artifact that's that has a shaman put the soul of a murderous demon into the Blood Sword. So anyone who wields the Blood Sword doesn't necessarily have control over it. You just want to kill and get blood. And Nottingham has probably been the most willing wielder of the Blood Sword. He seems to really have control over the carnage that the Blood Sword can bring.
And probably the most in control of his will when using the Blood Sword.
So check out Artifacts and, I don't know, Wikipedia Ian Nottingham. We think you'll like some of the references that you might see. And we find him as a very interesting villain. We never get to a point where we root for him, but we're kind of interested. Check us out. You can find us directly at our blog page. It's www.comicbooknoise.com/topcow.
Good journey.
This was another great segment. This was a blast for in the past for me, because I kind of read Witchblade in the very beginning and didn't read it for years and years and years. And I actually watched the TV show that they did years ago with Yancey Butler. And I remember Nottingham's character from the TV show. And I really thought he was a cool character. Hearing about his history and how they fleshed him out in their segment makes me want to pick up. I've picked up one of the trades when Ron Mars took the book over. And I think I bought one or two more that's on my bookshelf. And I think I ordered the first volume of Artifacts. So it makes me want to pick Artifacts up and read it to see how the character has evolved. Because, you know, how they described him, it makes me want to know more about the character. And, really check him out some more. Seems like he's really, you know, really cool and really, you know, viable badass. So I definitely will be checking more out of not just the villain himself, but their podcast. I don't dip into Top Cow as much as I do Marvel, DC, and Dark Horse and things of that nature. But now I was unfamiliar with their podcast. I love their coverage of it. Makes me want to now listen to it and have a podcast that covers that part of that publisher for me, and maybe get me into picking up even more new books. So again, this is what the whole purpose of this show is about. So we're going to go to the next segment, which will be me and my shoot of villains. As you'll see, I did my top four villains, and I call the segment my Mount Rushmore of villains. So check it out. Hope you like it. Hello, this is the Comic Book Savant, also known as James Harris, also known as Anubis on the comic book forums. This is my segment for the Comics Podcast crossover on the topic of villains. We could do whatever kind of take we wanted. I kind of couldn't settle on one villain, so I thought about doing my selections on thinking about if I had a Mount Rushmore of villains, who would be on there and why. So my picks for some of my favorite villains or strongest villains are Lex Luthor, Loki, Magneto, and Joker. To me, you can kind of throw Dr. Doom in here. They're kind of the stronger or some of the strongest character villain types that you've seen. And you've seen splashes of them over the years. replicated and parts stolen from their classic makeup. You have someone like Lex Luthor, which they're very universal. You've seen Lex Luthor as the mad scientist over the years at times. You've seen Lex Luthor be the millionaire business tycoon type villain and industrialist. You've seen him as a full-on supervillain with, be it a Black Lantern ring or his powered suits that he's had that he's going against Superman in. So I like the complexities in my villains, and I like intelligence. That's what tries to draw me in. You just don't want to have the supervillain of the week. We're not talking about villains like the Purple Man or someone like the Shroud, just kind of like throwaway villains that are there just for issue as filler. These are villains that are characters in themselves and potentially in the right situation with the right writer, as we've seen even with Lex Luthor, having his own run in a book and could really sustain a book. So he would probably be the mantle, the head at the top in the middle of my Mount Rushmore, because he's one of the more complex and multifaceted, and you've seen him in so many different lights as a villain. You can always kind of do a different take on him to make him more modern, or even throw him back into the kind of Silver Age version of him, and he always seems to his archetype always seems to work. Then we have Loki. I don't know, Loki, I've always loved mythology, so I've always loved Thor and Hercules, and Loki, just his character design is just so seamless with the green and the yellow and the big horns on his head. And I just think the one thing about him is no matter how evil and just downright nasty and disgusting of a person he is, just that trademark smile, that smirk on him, that can just send a chill down your spine. But at the same time, you gotta like him. You gotta root for him, even though he's a villain and he's a bad guy. You love to hate him and hate to love him, but you do, no matter what. So, he has to be definitely on my Mount Rushmore of villainy. And when written well and in more modern times, they've really made him not just a threat to Thor and the principal players in, his universe. He gets, to me, I think at times Loki gets shortchanged from being a viable threat to of being a villain. But, he was the reason why the Avengers assembled. No spoiler for the movie that will be coming out next summer. But if you didn't know from, Silver Age comics, he was the catalyst from helping the Avengers come together and join and come together in the first place and create a team. So, he's, been the spearhead of things. He wasn't the spearhead of Siege, but he came in and, they played a very prominent role after Norman Osborn came into power in the comics and took it and ran with it. If you go back even further, to Acts of Vengeance back in, I don't know how old everyone is. I'm 36 now, and I remember back in the 80s, mid-80s, mid to late 80s, they did the event Acts of Vengeance, and he was, he spearheaded that. So he's been a fixture, not just in, he's been the fixture in the Marvel Universe, and he's been a heavy hitter. He doesn't get the spotlight per se as a Magneto or the Green Goblin does, but he's a force to be reckoned with, he definitely, to me, deserves a spot on this mountain of villainy. It's well deserved. Then you have a Magneto, and it was a hard choice for me. I think he definitely deserves a spot, but I had to leave someone off, and I had to include the Joker. But I can, you can, I think I can interchange this selection between Magneto and Doctor Doom. What I love about these characters so much is that I don't think they're really as much bad. Is that they just have a skewed point of view, and their arrogance is so strong, and it leads them in so much of a path. They come off as righteous or holier than thou and above everything else that they're around. But really, in their mind, they feel like they're really doing the right thing, no matter how extreme their measures are to obtain that goal, that they feel justified in it. And they, in after a while, in the right hands, you can sympathize and understand their point of view, even though it's so radically different from your own. So you don't have to like them, but you can respect them. And I wouldn't say, and you become endeared to them in a matter of speaking. And you've seen Magneto flip sides back and forth, and currently, like in the X-Men, he's at X-Men now. You know, in the time in the 80s, in the mid 80s, you know, when he ran the school and taught the New Mutants, you know, for a while, in that beautiful long flowing magenta suit with the big white M on it, and the lady gloves that he wore, the gauntlet gloves. Yeah, that was a very badly, poorly conceived outfit. Luckily, that didn't stick, and they stuck him back in the classic outfit. You know, so I could think of him, of his arrogance and his untired devotion to knowing or feeling that he is doing everything right in a just way, though it might be extreme. And last but not least is the Joker. And the Joker, to me, is the wild card, because he's been written as complex. He's been written as tragic. He has all these shades, but you link them to emotions and just mental instability. But that's what it makes him fascinating. You know, you have a story like The Killing Joke, where it just shows how mentally and just utterly unstable this character is. And, you know, you hear him going over telling all these different origin stories, the way, you know, he became the way he is. And never, you know, and sucking you in and having you feel sympathy for him, but then knowing that it's all a lie. Like, he doesn't want his life to make sense. He doesn't want his mind to make sense, because that wouldn't be any fun to him. And it would draw him back from doing the utterly amazing and utterly disturbing things that he does to himself and other people around him for a laugh. So, but I love it. It's so many different shades of crazy. And a passion about what he does. He's so passionate about being that villain and being just that loose cannon, that gun, that hired gun, that just makes you just really dig the character. And at the same time, he can, you know, make you jump into your bed and under the covers. You know, he can be gruesome. He, you know, again, the reason why I picked these people to be on my Mount Rushmore of villainy is that they have certain things that other villains don't. They have complexity. You can see them potentially, you know, supporting their own books. You can see them potentially just being downright, you know, scary or a threat. They can make you feel for them and empathize and sympathize with them. They just have multiple shades of complexity, which is good, because they're off playing such strong characters. You want a villain to be all that and then some, because just like the hero, they need one another to play off of one another and to make each other better. So you can't have a better hero without a better villain to take them through something that they have to overcome and conquer to be the hero that we know and love. So
again, that was just my take on the whole villain thing. I hope you enjoyed. If you want to check me out, I'm over. You can do a search on iTunes for Comic Book Savant. You can go over to the website, comicbooksavant.com. You can shoot me an email, comicbooksavant@gmail.com. I hope you enjoy. Be on the lookout. We're hoping to do more of the comic podcast crossover. It had went away for a while, but we want to bring it back stronger than ever. Hope you guys enjoyed, and stay tuned. Bye. At comicbooksavant.com. Check that out. The next segment is coming up is from one of my good friends and mentor, Derek Coward over at Comic Book Noise, which you can find him at comicbooknoise.com. And here's his segment coming up right now. Check it out. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello, this is Derek Coward from Comic Book Noise, which can be found at comicbooknoise.com. And I'm going to talk about my favorite villain. My favorite villain is Dark Phoenix. She was once originally Phoenix, who was Jean Grey, Marvel Girl. Marvel Girl ended up needing to save her her teammates, and she all of a sudden had this really immense powers, cosmic-like power, and she became Phoenix. She had probably one of the ugliest costumes that a mainstream superhero has ever had. It was green and gold with a big loop sash on the side. I thought it was horrible, even way back then. But anyway, she started getting her mind messed with by Jason Wingard of the Hellfire Club, who was actually mastermind from the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And instead of her falling in love and being enthralled with Jason Wingard, mastermind, she ended up breaking free and becoming Dark Phoenix with a red and gold costume that was pretty much the same thing but looks so much better with a different color scheme. I don't know, it's really different, really bizarre the way that happened, I should say. And that led to some of the best comic books that Marvel has ever put out, which is the Dark Phoenix saga. Not only did Phoenix end up destroying a Star Trek clone, you know, there's an Enterprise clone, if you ask me. Then she ended up destroying an entire system, you know, billions of off-screen characters died at her hands. And when a villain goes that far, whether it's a fallen hero or not, when they go that far, there's very little hope for redemption. She ends up but that's not what really, you know, just cemented her as a villain. What cemented her as a villain was the way she manhandled the X-Men, you know. The X-Men were hesitant to take out one of their own, and it led to some really interesting dilemmas, you know, really interesting problems. And then when they finally thought they defeated her, all of a sudden here comes the Shi'ar, who were in charge of the planet that she destroyed and were in charge of the Enterprise clone that she destroyed. And they were going to put her to death. So the X-Men decided to fight the Imperial Guard, which was a Legion of Superheroes clone. And that led to X-Men 137, which is one of the best comic books ever made. You know, that comic book had it all. It had the drama. It had the tension. It had the suspense. It had the fights. It had surprises. It even had a little bit of comedy in there. I mean, it was just a great comic book. And it ended in a way that really shook comic book readers of all stripes, but especially X-Men comic book readers to our very core, because we always wondered how they were going to get out of getting rid of Phoenix, how they were going to not kill Jean Grey. And at the very end, she died, you know. I mean, and this was at a time where character deaths actually meant something, which is ironic because her resurrection, the resurrection of the character, is one thing that helped usher in the era of the revolving door of death. But when she died, you knew that it was it. You knew that this character was not coming back. She was dead. This wasn't like the Joker falling out of a helicopter or Baron Zemo and Captain America getting separated from a, you know, by a landslide. Like, oh my God, Zemo, is he gone forever? We will never know. You know, or the Joker, he's in the water. His body must have been swept away from the current. We'll never know. Well, this time you saw a smoldering pile of ash. You knew that Jean Grey, Phoenix, was dead. And this story was so powerful that when they did the comic, when they did the cartoon of the comic book series, they worked in the Dark Phoenix saga. When they made the movies, they worked in the Dark Phoenix saga. If there was a television show, they would work in the Dark Phoenix saga. It was such a good story. And that alone, and of course the much superior costume, is what makes Dark Phoenix, even after all these years, my favorite comic book villain. Thank you for listening. And I guess I'm done making a lot of noise.
For some reason, whenever Derek talks about the Dark Phoenix saga, I feel so guilty because he always speaks so passionately about how much he loved the story and how big an X-Men fan he is. And I grew up a big X-Men fan, loved the cartoon that Fox did in the 90s, read it periodically all through my childhood. But this is one of the stories that I've never read. I know the cartoon did the Dark Phoenix saga. They handled it in the movies. They always touch upon it, like he said, but I still never read that original story. The original issues are collected. I know it's in a trade or an essential somewhere, and I just have not gotten around to pick it up. And I feel like it's like the biggest crime ever because it's like one of the quintessential, monumental, cornerstone X-Men stories, and like this makes me feel even more guilty. Like I have to order it now and finally sit down and read it. it's funny. I just was sitting down watching X-Men 2 over the weekend on Blu-ray because I had after seeing First Class in a movie theater, I went back and ordered the. They had all four movies: X-Men 1, 2, 3, and Wolverine Origins. And as I was prepping, getting everything together for the show, and listening to his segment took me back to like, damn, I really need to read this story. So hopefully this will prompt everyone like myself to run out and go get that if you haven't read it, to finally read this great story. I know they did a real good job in a cartoon, so it'll be good to read the original source material for to get the original take on it and see how well they adapted it from the original story. So that was Derek over at Comic Books at Comic Book Noise. Go check him out, comicbooknoise.com. He hosts a ton of different podcasts through his Comic Book Noise family. Again, he was a huge mentor to me, helped me get started podcasting about 5 or so years ago. Me, him, and Bruce, which you'll hear from next, which from the Comics Cast, which we all call and I coined the name nickname for him, the Godfather of Podcasting. We all kind of snowballed the idea of bringing a comic book podcast crossover back. So the three of us kind of pulled together and put the word out and got some people to contribute. We hope for it to keep doing these if the response is good and we get good feedback. And we'll keep doing it and get more podcasters involved in the project. So it'll be a bigger forum for you to learn about new podcasts you might have never heard of before. So that's our hope or our vision in doing this whole thing and doing it. So next up, we have Bruce Rosenberger from the Comics Cast podcast. Check out his segment.
Hi, Bruce Rosenberger here, host of the Comics Cast podcast. One that you haven't heard much from lately, but you never know. No promises. Might get one out now and then. But I'm here to talk about villains, as is everybody else on this show. And, you know, it's weird. I started out and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to go back and talk about some of the really lame villains of the early days of Marvel and maybe DC if I can find them. So I started doing my research on Marvel villains, and it turned into a whole different piece for me, because You know, I started going through, and okay, now FF number one, November 1961, you had the Mole Man. Number two, you had the Skrulls. Number three, you had the Miracle Man. Okay, you know, turns out he's a hypnotist. Eh, you know, no big deal. Number four, we had Submariner. And then the Hulk number one came out that same month, May 1962, and you had the Gargoyle. You know, I can see a trend here. I can see that Stan Lee is quickly realizing that villains with a soft side, with a good side, misunderstood villains, you know, like the Mole Man and the Gargoyle, they can be popular, you know. And I'm you know you're fully expecting to see maybe more of that going on as you go, but it doesn't really happen. In July 1962, Dr. Doom, not fully fleshed out, kind of a misunderstood guy again, in a way. Well, no, he hasn't become that character yet, actually. I mean, he's just like a supervillain, you know. Hulk number two came out that same month. You had the Toadman. You know. August 62, Amazing Fantasy 15, you know, the origin of Spider-Man. You won't see any Spider-Man for several months now. And in Journey of the Mystery number 83, we had the first Thor story, which is the Stone Men from Saturn. It was art by Jack Kirby, plot by Stan Lee, and script by Larry Lieber. And you're going to see a lot of that now as the superheroes come on. You're going to see a lot of the what I consider minor heroes, supposedly plotted by Stan Lee, but scripted by Larry Lieber. And I think as time goes by, you're going to find that the scripting and the plot is by Larry Lieber. And, well, let's get to that then. Let's see here. September 62, we had Fantastic Four, Submariner, and Dr. Doom together. Hulk 3, we had the Ringmaster, another hypnotist. Journey into Mystery, we had the Executioner, kind of a Cold War type story. Again, Lee and Lieber. Tales to Astonish 35, we had the return of Ant-Man, Cold War spies. Oh boy. October 62, Fantastic Four number 7, we had Kurgo, Master of Planet X. Kind of lame. But, you know, you can't always hit it 100%, you know. Journey into Mystery, 85, Thor. We had the first appearance of Loki. Strange Tales, number 101, was introduced that same month starring the Human Torch. We had the Destroyer. You know, he's basically a fraud. And you're going to find that's a common theme throughout the early episodes of the Strange Tales with the Human Torch. Tales to Astonish number 36. We have the Challenge of Comrade X. Some more Cold War stuff. November 62, we have the Puppet Master in Fantastic Four number 8. Interesting character, a little goofy, but, you know, as time goes by, again, there's one that you know, he gets a little depth. Same month, Hulk number 4, Gladiator from Space, Cold War story. Journey into Mystery, Tomorrow Men. Kind of a... We go into the future and, you know, save the world. And Strange Tales 102, Wizard. Basically another, just kind of a super scientist kind of guy. Tales to Astonish 37, The Protector. Really lame. Ordinary guy with gadgets. You know, I mean, what's that all about? December 62, we have Fantastic Four number 9, Submariner's back. And, you know, as time goes by, we're starting to see that other side of the Submariner. And I think this is what... Stan Lee begins to realize, or Stan Lee and Jack Kirby together as a team, I don't exactly know how that whole thing worked. You know, I don't know who, you know. As time goes by, I think it's pretty obvious that Kirby takes over. I don't know about the early days. I really don't. But we have Journey into Mystery. We have Prisoner of the Reds, another Cold War story. Strange Tales 103, Prisoner of the Fifth Dimension. Same story as last month's Thor. It's like, what? Tales to Astonish, starring Egghead, you know, so now they're trying to create villains that are specifically for certain characters, that's, you know, for the Ant-Man. But I'm just, you know, trying to give you some of that early stuff and get the point out there, because now, from here on, you're going to start seeing a lot of the, well, a lot of stories that aren't by Lee and Kirby. It's bad enough that it's not Kirby, and some of the art's just eh. In particular, Journey in the Mystery, number 90, is a story by, well, it says Stan Lee plotted it and Larry Lieber did the script. It's called The Carbon Copy Man. The artwork is by an Al Hartley. Oh, my gosh. This is probably one of the most amazingly bad issues of the early days of Marvel. You really should check it out if you ever get a chance. The Carbon Copy Man, Journey into Mystery, number 90. Coming up in Strange Tales, number 104, we're going to see the first story of Pastepot Pete. Come on, Pastepot Pete, come on. You know, and these are the kind of things that we're going to start seeing now. So, okay, we've got Lee and Kirby. Somewhere along the line, Lee's going to wake up and he's going to start to say, hey, wait a minute, we need relevance. We need to make these stories a little bit more adult. But in the meantime, you have a lot of stories being written, you know, created by Lee and Kirby, but then taken over by Larry Lieber or Robert Bernstein, which is even worse. And these guys don't know what to do with the characters, and they just do these tired, lame, old stories, you know. So I just, like I said, I started out here to talk about lame villains of Marvel and kind of came to the realization that there's this evolution, this growth that's going on in that. And that's something that I'd like to cover in the future if I can ever get back to doing some of the Marvel month by month. We're partway into 1962, I think, where we basically do a synopsis of every issue that came out a particular month from Marvel. And then basically just talk about it. A real quick synopsis just to give you an idea what the story was about. And then, you know, some of us get together and we talk about it, or some others get together and talk about it. So that's something I'd like to do in the Comics Cast in the future. And that, by the way, is up at comicscast.libsyn.com. And just to make things difficult, comics and cast are spelled with K's. There's a story behind that, but we're not going to go into it. So anyway, comicscast.libsyn.com. Thanks.
Thanks, Bruce, for your segment. You know, I have to say, undoubtedly, hands down, Bruce is one of my favorite people I've met through the years in being related to the podcasting community, comic book podcasting community. One of the few of the people that I've really became friends with, I've met in person, and his wonderful wife, just a great person, just all the way around, very supportive. I just love him, and I love the fact that he was the one that originally came up with this whole concept, and I just missed, you know, participating in it and wanted to, you know, kind of bring it back. So I'm glad that he was allowed us to bring it back and even participate in it. He does a podcast like he stated. He does a podcast like he used to anymore, but he's still a fixture. Just supporting all the other podcasts out there and doing his artwork and things of that nature. And just his insight is just phenomenal. And I appreciate him taking the time out to do this and helping us put this whole thing back together. And like I said, hopefully to even keep it going. So thank you for that, Bruce. And we have one more segment coming up. And this is from the incredible Hulkcast. So check it out. Hope you like it.
Hey, everybody, this is Ryan King, co-host of the Incredible Hulkcast, and I'm here with my co-host, Luke Foster. And we just wanted to talk a little bit here, while we're talking about villains, about some of the Hulk villains.
Hey, what's up?
Yeah.
All about the villains today, yo.
All about the villains. And we thought, since lately there's been two Hulks roaming around the Marvel Universe, one real and one fake Hulk, as you know, any listeners.
It's not nice to call the Green Hulk a fake Hulk, man.
We know who's real. But so we thought we'd tackle some villains from both of them. Some you'll probably know better than others, and some are brand new to the fold. So first of all, no ode to villainy when it comes to Hulk would be anywhere near legit unless we talked about the leader, a.k.a. Samuel Stearns, a.k.a. probably the arch nemesis of the Hulk. We've seen many different incarnations of the leader, starting way back early on in the Hulk's run, when he kind of had the tall head and Tales to Astonish number 62, going all the way through when Peter David wrote him and Todd McFarlane was drawing, he got more of the brainy head. And we even saw him recently and the World War Hulk storyline, where he kind of goes back to the more traditional look again. But he's kind of always been a thorn in Hulk's side, whereas Hulk is all brawn, Leader is all smarts. They've even kind of changed and adapted his powers over the years, from being smart to actually having like real mental powers at times even. But the one consistent thing has been just his sheer intelligence and, probably the most memorable Leader moment in my mind would be a storyline that I have often talked about back when Sal Buscema was drawing the story where the Leader took on the Hulk and the Avengers. It was about a 4-issue storyline, and it was just one of those classic storylines that just represents everything that's good about comics, and it was just sheer fun to read and enjoy.
All right, my first one, I'm doing the Red Hulk villains, is this woman named Zero One. At the beginning of Jeff Parker's run on the Red Hulk, right after World War Hulk's ended, the Intelligentsia, Leader MODOK and a few others decide to try to destroy the Earth with their program called Scorched Earth. Zero One was a scientist who got caught up in the Scorched Earth program and in the subsequent battle, and became this woman of pure computing data, pure facts. Basically, she takes data and she interprets it as just a fact. Reality, fiction, it doesn't matter. She's there to – that she just processes it and tries to go forward with it. She believes that the Red Hulk is an obstacle to a new world order of intelligence because he represents brute and brawn, and she wants to destroy him. And she has been slowly putting together an army of lackeys, or at least one or two. And her plans have been culminating slowly over the last few months in the Hulk. So, Ryan, back to you.
All right. Next up would be the only villain who, I guess, from the start is actually stronger than the Hulk until, of course, you make the Hulk angry. And that would be the Abomination. He first debuted in Tales to Astonish number 90 back in April of 1967. He was actually made by Stan Lee purposely to be bigger and stronger than the Hulk. He was first introduced as Emil Blonsky, who is a KGB agent and spy who deliberately radiated himself with gamma radiation, only a greater quantity, in order to become what he is today. We've seen lots of changes with Abomination as well over the years, as far as his physical appearance, also even some of his backstory involving him and even his wife and Banner. So over the years, they've kind of made it more than just, who's the strongest one around. They've really kind of given it more of a background and kind of made it personal in some ways between he and Banner or he and Hulk even. And with Abomination, probably one of the more personal things that happened was that he was the one who had, as a result of his radiation, sent Betty Ross or Betty Banner into a coma, which she was in for quite some time, and basically taking her away from Bruce Banner as a result, caused a great deal of turmoil with him as well as with her father, General Ross. And the last time we've seen Abomination was actually during the Chaos Wars storyline when some of the dead characters came back. And we saw him once again go toe-to-toe with the Hulk and all of Hulk's friends as well.
All right, the next one I'm going to talk about is actually one of Zero One's lackeys that I referred to a moment ago. He's a new character called the Black Fog. He used to be a serial killer when Zero One was a child growing up in India. He terrorized the village where she grew up in, and as a result, he became this mythical creature in her mind known as the Black Fog. When her brain was transformed when she became Zero One, as I said earlier, she no longer can determine between reality and stories. Since facts are facts, she believes that the Black Fog is this monster that she remembers as a child instead of a sickly old man with one arm who's been rotting in a prison. So she breaks him out and rebuilds him and amplifies his killing abilities and gives him a fog ability and turns him into the monster that she remembers him to be. The Black Fog has had a couple of go-rounds with the Red Hulk. The Red Hulk has always stopped him because he's just that badass. but that doesn't mean that he and Zero One won't try again in the very near future.
Very near future. All right. Well, next up for me would be maybe not one of the more well-known villains or group of villains for the Hulk, but definitely for true Hulk fans, you're aware of these guys, and they're actually one of my favorites, and that would be the UFOs. And Luke, to put you on the spot, do you know any of the UFOs' names?
Nope, not a one. I just remember that they were in the initiative as one of the when Osborn took over the initiative, they became one of the 50-state initiative teams.
There you go. Well, the UFOs consist of X-Ray, Ironclad, Vector, and Vapor, who's the lone female character of the group. It actually started as they tried to actually replicate what had happened to the Fantastic Four and how they gained their powers with the cosmic radiation. So the one catch, though, as what they didn't really know was that they were exposed to a more massive amount. And that Banner actually was at the launch site and reprogrammed the computer, which kind of caused it, which is why they hold such a grudge today. I just really like them, the fact that you almost have this kind of team of evil, you know, Fantastic Four wannabes with a grudge, with a very wide array of powers, such as, Vector is telekinetic. So he can attract and repel matter from his body. Vapor can actually become, you know, any known gas. She's probably been the most effective one against the Hulk in the things that I've read. And X-Ray, he's basically just a living energy field, and he can expel various forms of heavy radiation in the form of these blasts. And Ironclad is just big, strong, and he can increase and decrease his own weight and, is... totally covered in metal. So haven't seen a lot of them lately, except for in Siege, as Luke alluded to. But they're a team that I would definitely love to see come back into the Hulk's universe once again.
Okay. There's my last one that I'm going to do. There's actually a few more I want to talk about, but we're only doing a taste of each Hulk's villains tonight, so you can always go out and research these characters in the books more and find out all sorts of different characters, not just the ones we talk about. The last one I wanted to talk about, I have to point out, because this is the character that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that Ryan hates America. this is General Fordian. Now, for those of you who don't know, Red Hulk is actually, spoilers, General Thunderbolt Ross. He made a deal with the Intelligentsia to become a Red Hulk, and things went south, and he and Banner faked his death. They pretended that Red Hulk actually killed Thunderbolt Ross during a fight. And Fordian, being a protege of Ross's, is now hunting down the Red Hulk, much as Ross hunted down the Green Hulk, unaware that it's actually his mentor that he is trying to kill. He, even though he's a military leader, he is constantly defying the United States government in his mad lunatic vendetta against a hero.
Sounds familiar.
Who has saved America numerous times.
Sounds familiar.
He even saved a trailer park full of people recently. innocent, true, red-blooded Joe Plummer Americans, ladies and gentlemen. And Ryan is supporting this mad lunatic America-hating general just because he doesn't like the Red Hulk.
That's right.
So Fordian has been around a lot in the Red Hulk, and I'm sure he'll be back again, along with many, along with Zero One, Black Fog, and many other characters in the Red Hulk mythos.
Yeah. And as far as Fordian knows, though, The Red Hulk killed General Ross, his mentor, who you always defend as being a true American hero. So he's really trying to do a noble thing to honor his predecessor.
Ross tried to save him from this path of madness, and he wouldn't have it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you should mention Ross, because my last villain that I'd like to bring up for the Green Hulk is General Thunderbolt Ross, who's probably one of the most consistent villains that Hulk has ever faced. And now he's gone so far as to make himself into a Hulk, which is just a slap in the face to the Hulk as well. And just as Luke accused Fortian of, Ross was so obsessed with his desire to get rid of Hulk. He went so beyond the boundaries of normalcy to do it that he actually was willing to commit treason by even allying himself with the leader and MODOK and the Abomination in order to destroy the Hulk. And then he got even honorably discharged. And what does he do when Betty and Bruce are getting married? He shows up with a gun at his daughter's wedding. And then what's he do with that? Oh, he proceeds to shoot Rick Jones in the gut because he's such a good guy. So this is the guy now then who has since even decided that he would submit himself to experiment to join his being with Zax, and also a very well-known villain in the Hulk universe, to try to take down the Hulk, which again was unsuccessful. So then what's he do one final time most recently? Oh, he allies himself with Leader and MODOK once again to become the Red Hulk, which is not the true Hulk that we know and love.
You know, all those times he was just very confused.
Yeah. Defend it how you will. But Thunderbolt Ross is easily one of the biggest villains. And aside from the Red Hulk watering down the true Hulk in the Marvel Universe, that would be the other reason why I really can't get behind the Red Hulk, is because he is one of the Hulk's biggest, most historically well-known villains and threats.
All right. Well, we could argue all day about this, but we were only given 5 minutes to record this, so... Yeah.
That's what we have our own podcast for, anyway.
Yeah, and that would be the Incredible Hulk Cast, which you can find each and every month only at the Deliberate Noise Network. We do reviews, news, listen feedback, opinions on stuff. Basically, you give us a mic, and we'll talk for an hour and a half.
About Hulks.
Oh, yes.
And you can catch us at www.comicbooknoise.com/Hulk.
All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. We hope you check us out sometime soon. Bye.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I'll just roll the stupid piano music.
Yeah, piano music. Okay.
Thanks, you guys. That was another great segment. I really just appreciate all the different hosts of their various podcasts for contributing to hopefully the first of many new comic book podcast crossover shows to come. Check them out. You can find the Incredible Hulk Cast. If you go over to comicbooknoise.com, it's one of the shows that Derek puts out on his feed, and it'll have a link. Or actually, you can go to either comicbooknoise.com and he'll have a link over to Ryan's page because he puts them out. Or if you go to comicbooknoisefamily.com, you should be able to find the Incredible Hulk Cast over there as well. Again, I hope the whole purpose of this, again, is to introduce you to new podcasts, open you up to the subject matter, to hope you find something of value, and get you reading new things and trying new things, get you trying new podcasts, get you reading new books or books that might have not been brought to your attention before till we do this particular show and hit a particular topic. So, again, I hope it served that purpose. I hope you enjoyed. And again, send feedback. You can either send feedback to me over at comicbooksavant@gmail.com. Or if you go over to my website, comicbooksavant.com, you can send an email straight through the webpage there. Or you can send email over to Derek@comicbooknoise, if I remember correctly. That's his main email for the show, since he's basically one of the producers of the show. I don't have an email for Bruce, but if you email either me or Derek, we'll pass it along to between the three of us. Again, and if it's something you want us to cover on the next time we do a comics book podcast crossover, email it to one of us, and we'll work it into the mix. We're going to try to do these at least once a month, or once every other month, just depending on, because sometimes it takes time to coordinate everybody to get them to sit down and, you know, have time to record their segment and get it into us, and then us, you know, mixing everything together. So it's a, you know, timely process, but I would like to do it once a month. But again, it's just depending on other people's schedules. So you'll see it either once a month or every other month, depending on the feedback that we get. So again, I hope you guys enjoyed. Hopefully we'll see you soon. If not, then nobody liked us. And I hope people do, because we enjoy doing it. All right. Take care. Bye.